Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Tuesday, September 4th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can subscribe to Locked On Cavaliers on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, aka iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to support the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and review. And that is, and you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Well, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CCMWrights. On today's show, we're going to go a little bit off the beaten path for the Cavaliers. We are going to be talking with Chasity Melvin, a former WNBA player who played for the Cleveland Rockers way back when. She also spent some time overseas, played for the Washington Mystics and the Chicago Sky in 12 WNBA seasons. She finished with career averages of 9.7 points and 5.4 rebounds per game, played at NC State, and now is working in the private sector and has moved on from basketball, although she still follows the game. I talked to Chasity about a number of topics, what it was like playing for Dan Hughes, who, of course, coached the Rockers, and now coaches the Seattle Storm. We talked about what it was like playing in the WNBA when she did and how the league changed over her the course of her career. And what she would ask for if she was in the WNBA's position right now and was going to be asking for perhaps, you know, a higher percentage of revenue or better travel or what she would really be pushing for. It is a fun interview. I think you guys are really going to like it. I think it's a very interesting topic right now. And Chasity was a pleasure to talk to. You can find her on Twitter at Chasity Melvin. That's ChasityMelvin. But you're going to, I think, really enjoy what she has to say. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back tomorrow and the rest of the week talking about George Hill and maybe trading him to the Suns. The second part of Sean Woodley and I's rankings of the most interesting East teams. You can go check that out right now and the mailbag. So a whole bunch more coming this week. Thank you again for supporting the show and listening. But here is my conversation with Chasity Melvin, formerly of the Cleveland Rockers and a longtime WNBA vet. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, first question I have for you is, you look, I just read this old SI story that was about the Rockers, and I was sort of struck by how some of the realities of being a WNBA player then, like 10 years ago or whatever, were sort of similar to what we read about now. In playing in that era, what was it like just the day-to-day grind of that era of playing in the WNBA?
Wow. Just with the commercial flights and the 3 to 4 games a week, and what people probably don't remember with the WNBA first started, you know, everything was new for everyone, the coaches, the players. You had a lot of players that had coached in college, so they were still very familiar with the training camp and two-a-days. So, you know, we had a month of two-a-days, then we go into the season and coaches were still practicing for 3 hours, you know, and you're flying commercial and having back-to-backs, and it was hard. So when people say, you know, these players play much better than the players and back in the day, you know, a lot of old school players would be like, we worked so hard and still bought it in the games. You know, you hear now, you know, the Aces wouldn't play, you know, because the flight got delayed, or players rest on travel days. It was none of that. We had shoot around before every game. You know, when I think back on it, you know, it's just like, but that's the way it was. And that's also the way it was with just women's basketball in general, and just basketball in general. If you want to talk about the younger kids coming up, you can't really get them to practice over 2 hours or practice hard. But for us, we went as long as the coach had us out there, and we better not like retire. So, you know, the game has evolved so much, not just with the players, but the coaches. You know, like I had a lot of players that played for Dan Hughes in San Antonio, and they were like, Chas, what are you talking about? Coach Hughes is so laid back. Like, you know, I was like, just when I played in Cleveland, forget it. You know, when I talked about playing my 37 minutes and then practicing, you know, like I wanted, you know, like we're still going 3 hours. They were like, well, you're starting. You got to, you know, you just got to tough it up, you know. So, and it's also great for the league. Now they get practice players.
Yeah.
You know, I had to go against Janice Braxton. People, you know, you're fighting against those players that want your position. So you're constantly competing. Like practice was not a day off.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going against Lisa Leslie one day. I got to go to practice the next day. And, she, you know, they're trying to prove to the coaches that they should be starting, which they should. I mean, that's the level of competition. But obviously bringing in those practice players now makes it a little bit easier for everyone because, you know, you're not really – because you don't have refs in practice. So or you have them, but
– Yeah, it's a little, yeah, it's a little different, yeah.
So what, it's a little different, yeah.
So when you're that you this grind that you're describing, no like really rest days, like the 3 games or 4 weeks of commercial flights, considering now what we know and how much players now in every sport seem to value recovery and body maintenance and invest so much in that, how were you able to like do anything similar to that or like a ground level of that on that type of demanding schedule and like get your body so it was, you know, optimized and healthy even in that compact crazy schedule?
Yeah, for me, I just listened to a lot of the vets, and I remember one of my favorite players, Jennifer Gillum. I'll never forget when she started eating healthy and she lost a lot of weight and started playing the stretch four position. You know, they talk about that a lot now, but Jennifer Gillum was a killer, you know, inside the paint. But right before she retired, she got, you know, started eating healthy, started really learning her body and lost weight and was out there killing it from the 3-point line. So, you know, I started to dabble in that and just learn how to eat on the road, what to eat the night before, my pregame meal. I like to keep that the same. So just different things like that. And as far as stretching, I never stretch. Like when I hear LeBron James and Allen Iverson, those I follow the NBA. So I kind of listen to everything they did because that's all I had growing up. And listening to their stories about never stretching, I was not one big on stretching. But, you know, when you're flying commercial and your knees are swollen and your feet are swollen when you get off the plane, you got to find ways to you know, stretch out, get loose so you can, you know, be at your best.
Looking back at Dan Hughes, what was he like as a coach then? You described that he's maybe a little less intense now with the day-to-day grind of stuff. But what was he like as a coach back then?
Well, Dan was great back then. He was, you know, obviously he helped shape me into the pro that I became. You know, his offensive style, his system is pretty much, you know, I still see a lot of the similarities today. But, you know, Dan is great because he has the ball with the different type of players and the stretch fours. Dan did not want me out shooting threes. He did not want me shooting. You know, and people don't understand. I played with a Elena Deladon before she came about, Ava Nemkova, you know. So she was a killer from the 3-point line. She was 6'4". So I played with her, but I was always inside. And I got a funny story because I played USA basketball once and I was playing in practice and I was shooting the threes. And Tina Thompson came up to me and she was like, why don't you shoot the threes in the game? I'm like, Dan won't let me. She was like, well, what's the worst they can do? I said, he's going to take me out. She was like, well, they'll put you back in. But I was the type of player that, and it's funny because a fan came up to me in North Carolina when I was at a high school. And he was like, I just love the way you play. You didn't care if you were a star or what. You was just going to get it done. And that's how I was. I didn't ever want to come out of the game. So I had a high respect for coaches and their systems. And I think that helped with my longevity. But also, it just kind of hurt, like, as far as the consistency. Because if a coach was like, we're not coming to you, then I'll try to be an offensive rebound. And I think with all the talented players I played with and the style of play and the offensive sets that Dan had, you know, I just worked myself. I learned how to play within a system that sometimes may not be directly the best system for me, but I learned how to succeed in it. So I give him a lot of credit for that.
What was, to circle back to your pregame meal, what was your go-to pregame meal that you try to keep consistent?
I had played in Italy my second year overseas, so pasta was easy for me to make. So I always eat pasta, the salad, and but some light pasta, not like heavy meat.
Yeah.
Know? And then most of the time, just grilled chicken. So I would eat grilled chicken before the game, and then I would eat pretty much anything after the game, because you could, back in the day, you could just really eat whatever after you played 40 minutes and got beat up. So,
yeah.
I was never, you know, I didn't really drink and do all that kind of stuff when I was playing, just because I was never a drinker, so that wasn't good for my body. Mm-hmm. And it's hard enough recovering, so I didn't need to add to it with alcohol. But I know players who function very well that did that. And obviously, you know, it's popular to drink wine in the NBA now. And I'm sure a few of the W drink, you know, and overseas just opens your mind to a lot. I played overseas for 14 years. So I had players who used to smoke during the games, drink. So, you know,
Smoking cigarettes or smoking like marijuana?
Yeah. Yeah. No, like smoking cigarettes.
Wow. I can't even imagine like doing anything physical, like inhaling a cigarette.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny. You know, like, there's just so many stories. There's such a huge difference from playing basketball or any sport overseas as compared to the States, mm-hmm. you know, and I thoroughly enjoyed playing overseas. I learned a lot. It really opened my mind. But just one regret, I wish I would have taken more time off, because I think in the latter years, your body hits that wall, you know, and I played in the summer and went directly overseas. So I definitely understand how Diana Taurasi and Angel McCautry had to take a year off. And in hindsight, I kind of wish I would have done that.
Look, I mean, financially, would it have been something where you take like a year off the WNBA and then play overseas, or like play in the WNBA and take a year off going overseas?
Well, for me, I think I would have had to take a year off going overseas.
Okay.
Just because the WNBA was, it was a little bit tricky, you know, as far as keeping your job, because like I said, those old school coaches and those coaches, their mindset was like, you should be here, you should be in training camp. Now coaches, like I said, have had to evolve with these players. They understand they're making this much money overseas. They understand they're getting tired. I actually got fined in DC just because I came back to training camp 2 weeks late because I said I needed to rest.
That's tough.
Yes, I got a hefty fine for that. And but you know, I didn't take the whole season off. I just said, you know, I just want to go home, get a chance to go home, see my family, and then come. And it wasn't like I wasn't a vet, but that's the way it was back then, you know. So you didn't want to get this bad rap. And for me, I was very concerned about my brand. And obviously, I played for Coach Al, UNC State. And so, you know, she taught me how to be a professional on and off the court. So I didn't want to get that label like mm-hmm. I'm trying to get out of training camp, because basketball, I loved it, and I practiced, hurt, whatever, you know, if I could get out there, I was playing. So for me though, I had made it to the championship that year, and I just was really tired. I just wanted a break. And my agent was like, they're going to find you. He tried to talk to him, but now you see the game has evolved. Players take a year off.
Yeah.
Like, let's come to the camp 2 weeks late. So, but that's the, I mean, that happened with the ABA, the NBA, you know, players get things different now. And as it should, I mean, all pro sports evolve, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's race car. I just saw something on the news today about race car drivers are getting younger. Back in the day, that was, because you wouldn't even think about young kids really getting into it. Their parents dropping them off to practice, you know?
Yeah.
So they barely have driver's license, but they can go practice and go 100 miles an hour on the racetrack. So, yeah. You know, pro sports evolve, and but it's good because we got a lot of new fans, a lot of new writers. And, you know, I'm on Twitter and I'm like, I am not a troll. Like, I love everybody's opinion, but I like when people, you know, like yourself or writers do, if you're coming, you got to learn the history of the game, you
yeah.
know? Well, and so I got a lot of I majored in communications. I actually mm-hmm. wanted to be an analyst. That was my dream when I went to college.
Yeah.
Before the pros, I was like, I want to be Robin Roberts. That was my goal. But, you know, fortunately for me, I got drafted right out of college. So, to the ABL, played 14 years, and I didn't really get enough experience because, like I said, I didn't take that year off. You know, like, it was crucial when Kara Lawson said, you know, I got to take a year off get some on-camera experience. So I have a lot of respect for those players who evolved and made the decisions they need to do to help them in transition. So I stay close to the game. I'm always following it, but I do, you know, I do give a lot of respect. I see the writers, I see people coming in, and I'm like, you got to know the entire league. You know, yeah. You got to know how it started, especially even with the TV remarks. You know, I was with my dad watching tape delay NBA yeah. games, you know, so I understand. And the ABL, the whole situation with the ABL. So it's just a lot goes on in professional sports in the business. And that's why when the WNBA even started in the summer, before this talk even got started, they were like, we got to get our season over before football season starts. Mm-hmm. I mean, and everybody know, even in college, football is king. So
you got a
long ways to go. We're tape delayed just for a football game. You got to chalk it up because there are tons of women's sports, you know, great softball professional teams, soccer teams, got a great soccer team in Raleigh, North Carolina, Atlanta. I mean, they're not even getting pubs. So, I mean, I'm not saying the WNBA should just be like, oh, we're grateful, and not demand more. But at the same time, there are a lot of professional women's sports. There are a lot of, like, people were, I think, arguing about the HBCU game, but it's like they don't even get on ESPN2 either. So yeah. I was kind of like, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, well, at least they get some time on the deuce, you know. So I know as a player, especially a young player, even in college, women's games, you wanted to get on ESPN or ESPN2. So a lot of people vie for that.
Yeah.
So it's just – it's just, you got to pay dues. You just got to wait.
Yeah.
And it'll get there. It'll get there, though. Yeah, I would love to get the finals, though, on ABC.
Yeah, that would, I mean, it would be big. I mean, it seems like they're going to pick, like, a random college football game over, like, the pinnacle of the WNBA, which is a shame. And, like, it's also a shame that, you know, the other day they transitioned from the end of a really good slate of games to no after show. Like there's no post game show. This was NBA deep and NBA playoffs. You would get 30 minutes or so of deep analysis and then like a bunch of stuff. And you're not getting that content from the people that are like holding the media rights to everything. And that's not good for the game. It's not fair to the players, and it's not good at all.
No, it's definitely not good at all. But at the same time, you know, you can't turn it on in the morning and they giving those highlights. When I could say back in the day, it we wouldn't even got those highlights the next day, you know. So, you know, it's just, I like it. You know, you obviously anybody giving attention to that, you know, even my sister was like, I can't find the game. You know, that shows that, hey, there are viewers out here. WNBA have fans and they want to see the game. So yeah, that's always a good thing.
there is like the surge of popularity of the WNBA right now with the TV ratings are up, attendance is up, and the league seems to be having like a very positive year. There is still that, you know, you mentioned being on Twitter, like there is still this like fan base of trolls that are, you know, degrading the game. But with it, obviously Twitter and Facebook and social media were not, you know, prevalent as they are now in society like 10 years ago or anything like that. But when you were playing, did you get that kind of sexist backlash from people, because like or assuming you did, like what was like, was that, is, was it like a frequent thing when you're traveling around in airports at games? Like what was that part of being a WNBA player in that era like for you? Was that like a consistent thing you guys saw when you're on the road?
I mean, really, when we were on the road and people were just coming to the games, I felt like there was an overall respect for the league. I think the challenges come with the trolls and everything else because I think at the beginning, people really didn't think this was going to last. And I think, and I mean, now this is in my opinion, I feel like this with a lot of men and just playing with guys, playing overseas, having a lot of guy friends. And now just working, you know, 9 to 5 in corporate, you know, men have a certain tendency to look like, oh, the women are doing this, this is good. But they don't really see the vision of where it can go, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So now, and I'm not saying all men, I'm just saying a few of them that I've encountered. Now you see it and we're still here. And not only are we still here, but we're really balling.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, Kobe, or you see Kobe, he has his daughters at the game and they're just like, wow. So now, you know, it's easier to kind of just throw hate if you never supported it and it's still here, then to just really just say, wow, this is a great league and they're playing well. But I don't think a lot of it is just I do think some of it's hate, but I think it's easy to judge a book by its cover. But like I said, until you open the book and read it, you're not going to really know if that book is good or not. Yeah. And I can say, like, I've thrown shade on other sports. Like, I have an incident with golf, you know. I try to keep up with all sports, and golf is just not my sport. And a lot of people love Tiger and talk to me about Tiger and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, wow, I mean, he's just playing golf, you know. Like, it's easy. Like, just. But I actually had my first I do a lot of celebrity golf tournaments, and I had the first time I played 18 holes. Clearly, I'm not good, but still, the guys on my team made me, you know, they made me putt every hole. And I was just thinking to myself, like, how many more holes? You know, like, are we done yet? And then when I got home that night, my back and my shoulders, everything was so sore. Now, clearly, I wasn't in shape, but still, just being out there with them and actually participating in the game and watching the other guys, you know, hit the ball and the concentration and everything it takes, I had a new appreciation for the game. Now, do I want to go watch it? No. I mean, am I a fan? But do I have a lot more respect for it and what they do? Yes, 100%. Like, 100% more respect for, you know, your guys that golf and women that golf. Like, it's tough. Mm-hmm. I tell myself, playing golf is like shooting a free throw the entire game. You know, one thing's off in your routine, the shot is off. And so I have a lot more respect for it. So I just say, when people come, I had to do it with my brothers and their friends. My brothers would get guys come to the game with them. They were hooked. You know, when you see the game in person, when you see these girls playing or seeing myself playing, it's just different. Mm-hmm. It's even different for me. Like, I grew up loving the NBA, watching it on TV, and just patterning my game after certain guys. When I got to the pros and I was able to go to my first NBA game, I was in shock. Like, just the quickness and seeing it in person and just seeing, like, wow, like, this is so fast. Like, TV just doesn't even do it justice. So any sport, whether it's soccer, you know, pro softball, baseball, like, I don't like watching baseball in the games, but I mean, on TV, but I love going to the game. Do mm-hmm. I pay attention? No, because I'm not really a baseball fan, but I mean, I enjoy going. The game is just different. Watching a professional game in person is just different. Same thing with NFL. Like, it's just, so I think a lot of these trolls, they've never gone to a game and they just talk about it. And that's me being ignorant too, talking about golf. And I've never really even played it or even watched them, like, really taking time to watch Tiger. And once I did that, it just changed my whole view. And I think that's why I don't even go back at trolls on Twitter. Come, like, they're just making ignorant comments. They're just making ignorant remarks. You know, they're just judging the book by its cover.
Yeah. Looking back at the Rockers, they obviously, when the franchise goes away, WBA has not been back in Cleveland, unfortunately, since then. When you go into that last season in 03, did you guys know, like, going into the year that, like, that was a possibility? And if not, or if so, like, how does that shape your season? And if not, like, how do you find out that this team is just not going to exist anymore because Gordon Gund decided he didn't want to own the team anymore?
Man, it was crazy. That entire year we knew. That's the most pressure I've played under in an entire season. Not just because of my love for basketball, but just as a team, it brought us closer because we had great fans in Cleveland. I mean, the fans, I still have Rocker fans, which I love social media for that point. There's some good things in social media. You know, they send you, they DM you stories or just say, you guys were so great. You know, we had fans. So not only did we want to prove it to ourselves, we knew we were a great product, but we wanted to show them, like, look, we're going to get to the finals because we were so close. We have, you know, Dan was doing a great job with the team. Everybody was coming together. We had just got Penny Taylor, LaToya Thomas, Ann Waters. Like, we were stacked, you know, and we were playing really great basketball. But I know I took the pressure upon myself, like, I don't want this to end. And it wasn't a direct from someone up top saying it's going to be over. Obviously, it's like you're on any job. You kind of hear you coming in, things just don't seem right. You know, somebody about to be let go. That's kind of how it was in Cleveland. Word on the street was just like, it doesn't matter what y'all do. Y'all not going to be here next year. And, you know, LeBron James was about to get drafted. So we were just hoping, like, dang, if we can make it to the finals, we'll show everybody we're worth keeping. And unfortunately, we lost to the Shock. And I'll never forget that, because that's my – it's funny you asked this story, because that's my flashback. Like, every player has a flashback if they could go back in the game and do something different. And it was the third game at home, and Cheryl Ford was killing us on the boards. And I said, I was guarding Swin Cash. Swin was killing us too. So the last play, they had a out of bounds play. And I said, I got to go help Toya in there and get the rebound, because they're going to miss. So Swin took the ball out, passed it inside. I think Ruth hit a jumper. I can't even remember exactly, but she shot a jumper. And I went to the middle of the paint to try to rebound. And it went to the opposite baseline side, and Swin came the other side, got rebound, put back, they won. And so I have so many flashbacks of that play. And that was the end of the Rockers, you know? But nobody really knows. Like, we understood that, you know, very well. And we could have made it to the finals that year. And so it's just, and my career really, after that, Rockers was like my place. Like, that's where I saw myself being. And then I went to DC, and, you know, you just, I think that was my one end that, hey, this is professional sports. Mm-hmm. And everything that I had learned and read following the NBA and just, you know, wanting to be a commentator and reading so many sports stories, I was like, hey, you know, this is it. This is professional sports. You know, you can only just concentrate on what you do.
So how was the end of the Rockers, and you finding out that, okay, you guys are going to, you know, be drafted other teams and moved on to other teams, and this franchise just isn't going to exist anymore? How was that something where the Guns talked to you guys? Was it someone from the league? Like, how do you find out about that? And was it something where they, like, do you feel like it was handled, like, something like that is, it's not a good situation to be in regardless, but, like, do you feel like it was something that, like, was handled with the amount of care it, something like that deserves?
No, but it's not handled like that in a professional sports across the board.
True.
And that's why it was so easy for me. I'm a huge LeBron James fan, but when he obviously started the evolution of, you know, deciding where he wanted to go, and people were just like, he was disloyal to Cleveland and all this, I understood very well how pro sports is. And it's, I mean, but, you know, now that I'm working, I also learned from my friends who have been working in corporate and just working for an organization, that's how it goes down. It doesn't always go down pretty. Like, you are working for an organization, so they are trying to be the best that they can be and do whatever they need to do. It's not like they can sincerely care for each person that works for them. Mm-hmm. And so do I think it, of course, we thought it could have been handled better, but no, it wasn't like, you know, we appreciate your services. You know, we really wanted to keep you guys. It was the end of the season. We went home. They were like, we're not going to have a season next year. Like, we knew we weren't going to be there next year. And that was it. And everybody had to fight, try to find somewhere to go overseas, and hope that they got drafted in the dispersal draft. That was pretty much it.
Last thing about the Rockers, do you feel like the city, how do you feel like the city of Cleveland responded to you guys as a franchise when you were around? And I mean, do you think it was, is a city that, at least from your understanding of it then and whatever you've, you know, learned about it since or thought about it since, that, like, would be a good home for a WNBA franchise? It was, I mean, one of the original franchises, and
yeah,
it is, I mean, there is, like, a very good, like, there is, like, the sort of support system, it seems like, in terms of an arena, an NBA team already there, that would seem to be, like, if they were to expand, it would seem like a possible option.
Oh, man, Cleveland would be the best place. I mean, my family has so many great memories. Like I said, the fans still talk about it. I mean, it's one place, you know, Cleveland just gravitates towards their sports team. I mean, I fell in love with baseball in Cleveland with the Indians. So, you know, I would go to the game. I mean, like, you just, I mean, and even the Browns, I bought a Brownies. Like, it's just crazy. So, yeah, they welcomed us and they loved us. Like I said, we had a lot of fans. Like, we didn't have to put curtains up during the finals. There were actually people up in the bleachers, kind of like Minnesota. Like, they're going to come to the game. They're going to come. And it's a great place where the Quicken Loans, I mean, it's not Quicken Loans anymore, but where I think where the arena is now next to the baseball stadium. I mean, it's cool in the summer. People are always out downtown. So, yeah, it's a great place for a team. And, I mean, you won't ask one Rocker player to play for the Rockets if they had a great experience. They'll tell you, unbelievable. I mean, it was an unbelievable experience to accomplish your dream and then go to a place where the fans really accept you and we're all about the Rockers.
If you were playing now and you look ahead at the possible, you know, there's a possible labor negotiation in the fall. Is there something you would particularly ask for at the top of the list, be it the higher share of the revenue, be it, you know, getting, you know, better, a different type of schedule, getting, you know, chartered plane travel? Would there be something you as a player would be like saying, telling your union rep, or if you talking in the union negotiations, that you would be really, really pushing for at the top of your list?
The top of my list would definitely be the chartered flights, if you could get that, especially with security now. I mean, security wasn't that bad. We were flying commercial. It started at the end, like right before I retired. But now, straight. But you have TSA, but still, yeah. The charter flights would probably be at the top of my list. Second, I would ask for some type of pension. A lot, you know, WNBA players aren't even talking about this, but all the pro sports, you know, you got some type of pension in there. We don't have any. So, you know, I played 12 years in the league. There's nothing really to show for it except what I contributed to my 401k. And thankfully, I was smart enough to do that. And you know, but other than that, no. You know, like all the – and now the league, you know, obviously they're saying players don't play as long. But still, there should be something in place for their years of service. Like Sue Bird, she would retire. Diana Taurasi will retire with what? You know, I mean, well, they'll retire. I mean, obviously, they've done their investments, but there's not like a WNBA pension.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't know that as well. With the higher salaries, obviously, if you're getting in the revenue and there is a percentage and the WNBA players aren't getting it, they should get it. But also, you know, the players aren't even talking about these teams. You have a budget for your salaries. You can pay this player, gets this much. They don't even reach their cap. They got money left over. For what? Make sure all the players, whatever that budget is, make sure everybody is getting paid. So you shouldn't have, like, whatever the budget is, and then you have, like, $100,000 left over.
Yeah.
You could add that to the player's salaries. And that, a lot of teams have money left over. Why? So, you know, salaries could go up just from that. Like, what are you saving the money for?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, so, put it in the players' hands. Yeah, you
know, yeah. So I would talk to, you know, that would be something else that could be discussed if you're saying you're not actually making this much money. So for me, those would be the top three things on the list. Would be the top three.
Last question, Afi, and thank you again so much for your time. Who you look at the four teams left? Who's your pick to win it all?
It's funny because before it started, I said Phoenix and Washington were going to be in the finals, and I was just like, I mean, I watched the season the whole year, and I get it, and now to just see where the finals are, I'm just like, wait. Chaz, you might be right. Phoenix and DC could be in the finals for real. that's who I see. I mean, it's unfortunate with the injuries, but I'm not going to bet against Diana.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Seattle should have closed it out. I mean, I'm not trying to go to a fifth game with Diana Taurasi, okay? I mean, I'm just not. And Griner is just the X factor. Like Griner, people are hard on her, but she's unstoppable. So she does play her. Like no one really can stop her. Mm-hmm. And the WNBA game hasn't quite grown to the NBA game where it's all about threes. You know, it's still threes and twos count. So when you got Griner and DT in a fifth game, and then Dwanna Bonner just playing lights out, I just don't know. I mean, all the pressure's on Seattle. And I love Sue Bird. She's played with a broken nose, but like I said, if she's got to lead that team, she's got to take charge. And so I don't know. I'm just not going to bet against Diana in this game. I mean, but she's what, 14-0 now?
Yeah.
In winner take all. So history, you know, that one loss. This might be it, but I'm not betting against her. And so for the East, I just really have DC, and I've always had them because they got Elena Deladon.
Mm-hmm.
And pro sports, I don't care what sport it is, you need that superstar. Okay? You need a superstar in that starting lineup. One or two. And for the Dream, people are saying, oh, well, they're not talking about, you know, how the Dream is playing without Angel. Well, that's because we knew they were going into the playoffs without Angel.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they played without her entire season last year. But if you got Elena Deladon on that court, you got a better shot at winning it than the Dream did. Because she's just a heck of a player. And even if she's not scoring, she spaces the floor where other people can do work.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dream, I don't, although they play well, and I think, I mean, every WNBA team has great players. And that's what people need to understand. A lot of teams can go to the playoffs without a superstar and do well and have some success. But in these game five games, if you don't have a true consistent superstar that you know is going to space the floor and really give you a shot, like, with the Dream, it's up in the air because who's going to step up? Is it going to be Bentley? Is it going to be Renee Montgomery? Is it going to be Hayes? Like, you just don't know. But you do know for the Mystics, if Elena Deladon is on that court, you got a problem to deal with. And so that's why that's the only reason I'm giving the Mystics the edge in the Dream series. It's not because I don't think they have a great team and great players, but I don't think they have – I don't know who's that one player that's going – you know, step up and win that decisive game five. I really don't. But they do have a shot. I just think Mystics have a better shot with Elena Deladon. And I my biggest regret was not going to Seattle to play with Sue Bird. She would have changed my career. I would have probably retired a champion if I would have gone to sign with Seattle before I signed that last contract with DC. So I love Sue Bird and I know what she can do. So it'll be a tough matchup in that game five, but like I said, I just can't bet against DT.
Yeah, it's going to be a really, I think, exciting finish to what's been a great season, but thank you so much for chatting with me.
Oh, no, thanks for having me, Chris.